Welcome to Double Dodge, an explicit Guild Ball podcast where your hosts Cam and Dave talk about Guild Ball and Guild Ball related activity until we're either overtaken by catastrophic global warming or we're bored to death of the subject. We're not the best, but we are the dodgiest. Double Dodge, come join the Magical Pants Party.
I love Double Dodge. Welcome to episode 3 of Double Dodge, the Obpocalypse. I'm your host, Cam.
And I'm Dave.
And in this episode, we decided to get some more credibility on the show, so we thought we'd go for a US champ, given that Gen Con just occurred a week and a bit ago. And so we got in touch with Mr. Jordan Nack and got him on for a bit of an interview.
Yes, we did indeed, and he was both generous with his time and his opinions. So, some thoughts on I guess the finals games that he played in Gen Con, and you know, about morticians, about the state of the game more generally.
It's all coming up morticians at the moment, isn't it?
Well,
it just depends on your meta, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, interestingly, you know, you've got the US championships final four being Obulus. So the final two, at the very least, being Obulus, you know, the odds were that Obulus was always going to win. But
yeah, no, that is pretty good.
I think the more interesting thing to come out of that chat is that the idea that Obulus is so good at doing everything, therefore he is the best in terms of competitive choices. You know, if you're looking to, I guess, play in a tournament environment where you don't want any bad matchups. So
yeah, no, absolutely. I totally agree with that. I think maybe we'll, you know, leave it for people to have a listen and see what they think of the interview. But if you are wanting to pick up Obulus, you could probably contact our friend Mr. Daryl from Big Daz from NerdvanaGamesSA.com. He's our sponsor. And I'm sure he will sell you Obulus along with all the other bells and whistles that make him sing. So, yeah, he'd be more than happy to. Daz has always been a big supporter of the show, and so we'd love to give, you know, big shout-out to him and make sure that he keeps getting things rolling.
Yeah, and keep supporting local tournaments, you know, for both you and me and everybody else in the area. Yeah, so we've also got Carball. Another
Indeed.
Carball. Seems to have gone over well with people, like, from the feedback we've had, people seem to like it, so.
Yeah, I think maybe because, and this is obviously some of the feedback, that people have liked the idea, because they all do it, you know, they know the situation of driving to, you know, their local game store or whatever and having a bit of a chat on the way and dojoing a few ideas. So it was just an efficient kind of thing that we thought of, and we like doing it. So Carball this week, we got an idea for a list from Jordan, and so it was an engineer's list. Dave thought he wanted to try it out.
Thought I wanted to, and yeah. I played it.
So it's a Carball of NGs, a Ballista NGs versus a Corsair fish lineup that I like to play. So,
two words, Campbell, fuck Ballista.
Yes. So, yeah, have a listen. We do a bit of a recap on, obviously, afterwards. That's kind of the nature of Carball. One other thing I wanted to go into was just in episode 2, I raised a question that I like to ask our local pundit, Mr. Tim. He basically answers all my questions. I email him any time of the day or week, and he replies to me. And this was a Vet Catalyst question, just to do with how his intensify and damage result triggers with Tough Hide. And we got the ruling back, and it's basically the way that most people would have played it anyway, is that Tough Hide, so the result basically has a damage plus an intensifier. The Tough Hide does take one damage off both of those results. So it means, yeah, if you're using Vet Catalyst, maybe think twice about charging their tough hide model.
I always do. Yeah, I also wanted to throw a shout out to everybody on the forums who has been giving us feedback about the show. A lot of it's been really positive, and where it hasn't been positive, it's been very constructive criticism, so mainly around episode one and sound levels. We're continuing to work on that and improve it, so thanks for getting back to us and sharing your opinion, particularly Doppelganger, who I private messaged, and he got back to me, and I really appreciate the feedback that he provided, so thank you, keep it up.
Absolutely. No, we love the feedback. If you want to catch us, I mean, we'll do a shout at the end as well, but you can jump on the Steamforged forums. You can also contact us on Twitter. We'll give you those at the end of the episode, and we're more than happy to have a chat to you. We love everything Guild Ball, so, yeah, we're on there all the time.
Yep, so we'll get into this. And we'll do it in chronological order this time, because that's something else that came up via feedback.
Yes.
So we've got Jordan up first, followed by Carball. One feeds into the other in some kind of seamless exercise.
Brilliant.
Let's get this underway, shall we, Cam?
Cool. Let's do it.
Hello?
Hey, Jordan, how are you?
I'm not bad. How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Thank you very much for doing this. This is really nice of you.
Yeah, no problem.
So I've got Campbell on the line as well.
How you going?
Hey.
So, Jordan, as part of our shtick, we ask our guests three questions, and we would like to put those three questions to you right now. First question is... do you have anything you'd like to say to Gabe from the Kickoff podcast?
As I have no idea who that is, I'll have to pass.
Right, okay. Well, I think that speaks volumes, really. The second question is sort of drawing on the historical context of the Rio Olympics and the furor surrounding drug cheating at that particular gathering. Now, we know that Guild Ballers are notorious drug cheats. Do you think that we should put in a stricter regime?
Probably. I mean, it can only help at this point.
And did anybody make you piss in a cup whilst you were competing?
Competing or drinking?
Either.
No comment.
And the third question we have for you is, do you think that... the 2016 U.S. champs will be forever remembered as the Obpocalypse?
Very probably, considering the result.
Well, that concludes the quickfire question round, and I guess we want to move into the meat and potatoes of this interview. Would you like to recap your Gen Con experience for us?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I had a great time at Gen Con. It was kind of a last-minute trip for me, but I don't know how familiar your Australian listeners are with American geography, but Indianapolis and Chicago are only about a three-hour drive, so it's pretty close. Mm-hmm. Played in qualifiers on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Three different guilds. I qualified each day. Playing Morticians, my main guild, Saturday night and Sunday in the championship finals, and I was able to pull down the victory.
Excellent. Yeah. So, in addition to Morticians, what other guilds were you playing?
I played Union on Saturday, Union on Friday, and Engineers on Saturday.
Right. Okay. So obviously the top four of the US champs were all Morticians. And from what I've read online on some of the forums, there is a heavy concentration of Morticians in the Chicago meta. Is there any particular reason why you took Morticians?
I mean, it's the guild I started out with and enjoy, but no, I took it because Ovulus is broken and dumb. And I There's no bad matchups.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's really topical as well because, you know, obviously straight after the tournament results were posted, you saw a lot of traffic on the forums sort of throwing up that point that, you know, Obulus is in fact broken. And we had a chat with a guy named Byron Sanchez last podcast, and he made the point that, you know, 8 influence on a captain that can do pretty much anything is too good for the current state of the game. I mean, did you want to comment on that at all?
I would say that that's just one factor of why he's too good. He automatically generates momentum. He's got arguably the best legendary in the game. He can be in many situations unkillable. Yeah, he can also be just randomly the best striker, the best goal scorer. So I agree. It's his versatility and his entire lack of weaknesses.
Mm. Yeah. I was just going to jump in there, so it would be safe to say that you probably saw no scalpel then throughout the weekend, or at least at the top end of the spectrum.
That's actually not true. In my second round of the Masters Finals, I played against scalpel.
But you won, so therefore, yeah, I'll win that face-off.
12-0.
Ow. Wow!
Far out.
Yeah. Well, did you want to walk through some of your games? Maybe the last four or so, and then the final game. Anything that particularly sort of jumped out during the course of those?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to go through my games. So the first round of the Masters, I got paired up with a nice guy named Nicola from New Zealand, actually, who I guess had made it all the way, and was saying it would have been pretty ironic if he had been the United States champion.
We would have hailed him as one of our own.
Yeah, he was playing Esters Brewers, which is a matchup I'm pretty familiar with, especially against Obulus. And a few key things were that he did not have Avarice and Greed, so I was able to choose to receive the ball and have last activation. And then also he didn't have Stave, which I think is an important control piece in that matchup. So I was able to, on turn one, kill Gutter and set up for first activation turn 2 goal, so just starting off 6-0. And then it really turned into a grind from there, but he essentially just couldn't stop me from getting the takeouts I needed to finish it, so it ended 12-8. He played a pretty solid game. I just didn't feel like he had all the tools he needed for that matchup.
So do you think the Avarice and Greed having the extra activation was a massive advantage for you in that one?
Oh yeah, if I see an opponent's 9 or a 9 in this case, usually 8, who doesn't have Avarice and Greed, I just feel like I can't even lose the game.
Far out. Do you? And this is a slight tangent, but it's a question on Avarice and Greed. Do you feel that Greed is at risk when you're playing to smoke?
No, I don't feel like Greed is ever really at risk if you mitigate it. I mean, you can spend his first 2 activations walking 8 inches backwards to the back line.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I mean, it's an indication of how that particular model, Avarice and Greed, bends the meta, though. You know, you basically, in a world where, you know, if you're not playing 7 players, Avarice and Greed being the 6th and the 7th, you're not as competitive as you need to be.
I think that's unquestionable, especially given the power of first turn in this game.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you thrashed our Antipodean counterpart, and what did you move on to after that?
So after that, I played a nice guy named Tony Mendez, who is, I think, from Kentucky, a guy I've played before. He was the one playing Scalpel. And again, he did not have Avarice and Greed, and he plays a slightly different style of scalpel than I'm used to playing against. But I set up for a good first turn. At one point during the first turn, I charged his Mist, who defensive stanced, charging with Obulus, and I rapped.
Oh my god.
Poor bastard.
Yeah, that was pretty rough.
Wow.
With a tooled up Obulus.
Oh, no. Oh. Yeah, that's not good. And any significant sort of moments in that game? I mean, you talk about him playing Scalpel a little bit differently. Did you want to expand on that?
Oh, well, I mostly just talk about his lineup. The critical things in that game were he legendaried to pull my captain in, took one attack, and I counterattacked and double dodged away. And that was the only attack Scalpel ever made in that entire game.
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just used Silence and Avarice and Greed to control her. And I felt like I played a pretty good game there, and my dice certainly didn't hurt me. Yeah. And the matchup also felt pretty advantageous.
Yeah, rolling that many sixes on a charge is always pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
No. You know, it's a dice game. It's going to happen, so...
Yeah. So what sort of play style with Scalpel are you used to seeing, and how did it differ this time around?
So one of my playing partners, who ended up finishing third in this event, Scalpel is his main captain, guy by the name of Alex Botts, a very good guy.
Yep.
He plays a pretty aggressive style, trying to leverage early momentum on turn one into usually a first activation, 6-point activation on turn two, and then second wind away, and just keep pressure on you from there.
Right. And what your opponent in this instance was playing more defensively, or?
Yeah, he played very defensively. He tried to sort of keep away from me, but that just isn't going to work in that matchup.
Mm-hmm. It does say a lot about Obulus's ability to get out of combat when he doesn't want to be in it as well. I mean, I play Mortz as my first guild, and, you know, I think that's one of the great frustrations. He brings so much influence, and he's so hard to tag. Incredibly versatile captain.
Yeah, there's nothing you can't do.
Yeah. So, okay, you win that game, and then what do you move into?
And then I play against my good friend and playing partner, against whom I've played probably 3/4 of the total Guild Ball games I've played against, my friend Patrick Van Velza, who is also playing Obulus.
Right. And do you have any particular viewpoints on the Obulus mirror match? Like, from what I can tell, all you guys in Chicago have been grinding it out on the regular recently.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of practice on the mirror, including I've practiced this against Patrick a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I hold the view that I think it's slightly better to kick to try and hold for last activation, mm-hmm. so that you're threatening to legendary on turn one and just sort of try and snowball the game. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened, and he didn't get great value. In fact, he got strictly negative value out of his first turn, where he went up to try and puppet master my Obulus, and which I don't think would have been hugely impactful, but it would have been good. And then he just missed the puppet master, which he didn't confidence. So, That sort of spell, in my opinion, that was the. I mean, I was able to leave his Obulus on one health, so that I can kill him on my first activation of the next turn, and just kind of snowball the game and win the fight in the center.
Yes, yeah. Jace, when you miss... Sorry, Cam, go.
No, I was just going to say, do you find that that's a big component of the mirror match, is who can basically control or kill the other Obulus?
I found that usually both Obuluses will die at some point.
And there's a lot of people who would be supportive of that.
I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah, there's enough 2-inch melee, and there's enough tricks where Obulus can usually get to his counterpart at some point. That, but it's always rough to be the first one to lose your Obulus.
Mm.
And do you find that can be possibly not a turning point, but yeah, where the snowball can begin? So it becomes a bit of a posturing game to, you know, who can get that to trigger first.
Yeah, especially in the lineups we were playing, which was essentially without a striker, so it was all going to be about the fight in the center. And if I can have my captain contributing and his captain is a little bit tentative, then I feel like I'm just playing advantageously in the center.
Yeah. Sorry, just to go back, maybe we should just get you to tell us what your 8 was as well. I mean, I think most people have a fair idea, but what your 8 players were, so we can get an idea of what you subbed in and out.
Sure, and it's actually 9 for this particular tournament.
Oh, so you played is that the champions, or is that just...
Yeah, this is the... I think it's, yeah, the champions.
Yep.
Yeah, so Obulus was the captain, and Dirge was the mascot, of course, because I didn't get my Vile Swarm painted, and even if I did, it's kind of garbage. And then it was Silence, Mist, Rage, Avarice and Greed, Casket, and Ghast.
Mm. Yeah, it's...
And then, and then the last one would be Cosset.
Okay. Why Cosset?
I essentially ran out of other players. I like Cosset in especially in the fish matchup, where I think lure can be very valuable, and where her glass cannon nature might not necessarily get her killed so easily against a team that doesn't hit very hard.
All right, so that was the semifinals that you moved into, just described?
Yeah, that was the semifinals.
Right. And what, it was just morticians all the way from there, I take it?
Yeah, so three mirror matches out of four rounds, not bad.
Wow, right. Well, did you want to jump to the final game?
Sure.
My understanding is that was it was a very tight game. And that you sort of swung it back in your favor at one point.
Yeah, it was a very tight game that I had to bring around. And just a little bit of background in this is my opponent in that game, Brian White, is also a fellow War Machine player, which is my gaming background. In fact, in the War Machine Weekend Invitational, which is sort of like our national War Machine Championship, he edged me out in a very come-from-behind fashion this past year. So right. It felt really good to be able to pull one out against him that way.
Right. It's time for payback. I like it.
Yeah, and he's an excellent player and a good guy. And realistically, he was the player I was most scared of facing in this tournament.
Well, how did it roll out?
So turn one, I did my same thing where I kick with Obulus. He chose to receive, but I was sort of fine with that. And I felt like I got a slightly better side. I got some fast ground for players coming back in. Mm-hmm. And he dodged Silence Forward on a pass, which I two flashed. And then he went for the one die tucked on Obulus on turn one to force him to go next, mm-hmm. which he hit, which was huge. If he misses that, I feel really good about this game. But then he tries to pass the ball away to dodge backwards, and he misses. Silence is sitting in front of my tooled up captain with a two flash token out.
Yeah.
Right. And how much did Obulus, or how much did your Obulus have on him at that point?
8.
Oh, hello. That's not going to end well.
Yes. So I do end up killing his Silence. In exchange, and he was able to use his legendary to set up and get my Obulus. But I actually don't feel so bad about this trade because it did take his legendary out of the game, and I did get 2 points from it.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, that's half the battle, isn't it? Getting the legendary out of the way, or the threat of the legendary out of the way.
And I think in every subsequent turn, me just holding my legendary over him meant that I auto-won the initiative roll by having that much more momentum.
Yeah. Yep.
So from there, he scores a goal and sort of plays Obulus in the middle. But I'm able to kill his Obulus because knowing his Obulus was coming in on mine, I set the poison cloud up. So he took some poison damage coming in, and I sort of cornered him with the bird, rage, and silence, and was able to kill him without the use of my Obulus, which I thought was important. And then I just started winning the fight in the middle. You know, he had scored a goal with Obulus, so he was up 6-2. And then, you know, I go and I kill his Avarice, I kill his captain, I eventually kill his rage, and I'm set up for a goal with my Obulus, which we go back and forth. You know, I'm trying to set it up, he's trying to stop it, some shenanigans back and forth. But in the end, I'm able to get my Obulus with the ball, and 6 momentum and 2 influence base to base with the goal. So I can take 2 fully bonus time shots and hit the first one home for the win.
Brilliant. Awesome. Brilliant. Did you just want to talk about why having your Obulus base to base with the goal is relevant? Because, you know, I think there might be some people who haven't come across this particular setup before.
Sure. It's because if you have enough influence to kick multiple goals, but you miss the goal, it can scatter away. If you're base to base with the goal, the ball cannot possibly scatter away in a place where you can't get it. So you can always take multiple shots.
It's a good pick.
It is good.
Yeah, and as I'm a professional at missing goals with Obulus, so I felt like that was an important thing to mention.
Well, that's interesting you say that. I'm a professional at missing 4 dice shots at goals, so.
Yeah, that kickstat, that 2-6 kickstat, it's not the best, but if it were any higher, he'd just be busted. Well, He'd be more well, busted.
More busted, yeah.
So at that point, you win the game. How long did it go for?
I went for about an hour. We each had about 15 minutes left on our clock, I would say.
It's pretty reasonable, yep. Man, that's fantastic. And you've won your ticket to the UK, I take it, as a result of that?
Yeah, I have. I'm very excited about
that. Man, that's an amazing prize. That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm not complaining.
Yeah. So any particular, I guess, thoughts that you have as a result of that tournament run? I mean, did anything sort of any sort of recurring thoughts that popped up or any observations you wanted to share?
Beyond just how absurd Obulus is, I would say that coming into Gen Con, I wasn't really certain, you know, where Chicago ranked in terms of, you know, having a strong meta. But I think we proved that we clearly have a very strong meta. We finished, I think, we brought six competitive players to Gen Con, and five of which qualified for the top 16, and then we finished 1, 3, 4, and 6.
Mm. That's an incredible result.
That's pretty good. Did you, now given obviously the, so SteamCon is the world champs, and that's November, I believe, end of November. Do you think they'll actually release any more models? And if they do, are there any that you'd actually consider putting into your, you know, your nine-man lineup? I mean, obviously, it'd be Vile Swarm, which you've kind of already voiced as garbage, but like Vet Graves or anything like that?
I think he's also pretty garbage. Without any major changes to the game, if I were to play Morticians, which is a big if, you know, I don't even consider them to be the faction I play the strongest. I probably wouldn't consider any major changes. You know, maybe I'll throw Minx in instead of Cosset or something like that. Hmm. But that's not the whole time I never played Cosset. So
she's just there warming the bench.
Well, you needed a drinks person or a ball boy or something like that, ball girl.
A waitress.
Yeah, a waitress. There you go. Yeah, mm-hmm. So she was just servicing the rest of the team. Nothing wrong with that. Did anyone? So I asked about obviously the season two Mort's captains or Captain Scalpel. Were there any other of the season two? You said Esters. Did you see some smoke around or some, you know, some of the other ones? Obviously, Fillet's probably a big one.
Yeah. Fillet was actually no Butcher's player made the top 16 with Fillet, which I thought was pretty surprising because that's a captain I've had a little bit of trouble against. But there was a Corsair player there who did pretty well. One of the Chicago guys was playing Hammer. He came in sixth. Yeah, the two Esters players, I believe.
Mm.
So there was a good kind of spread of the different captains. Which, I mean, as far as all the matchups, which one or what do you kind of fear the most? Like, is there a specific captain or matchup that you don't like?
Not with Obulus. I don't think that there's any bad matchups, which is one of his big problems.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I like Fillet as well. I like Hammer as well. But compared to captains like Obulus or even Midas, they do seem incredibly linear. And if you know how to shut them down, then it's not hard to do.
Yeah, just especially Hammer, who's got a very flat threat range and doesn't really do anything outside of it.
Yes, he does hit like a truck, but he's got to get there. I mean, this is a really interesting point about, I guess, captains like Obulus, who can pretty much do whatever you need them to. This idea that versatility or tactical flexibility is of paramount importance in Guild Ball. Esters is probably a good example of a captain who can also provide that a bit. So I'm not surprised that, you know, she saw the finals tables. But, why... What would you do to, I guess, make Obulus less busted? You know, if we're having a conversation about how this captain is particularly busted, what would you do to bring him back into line?
I think there are a number of potential things. For me, the most obvious is Puppet Master. The fact that you get one influence back just seems patently absurd.
Yeah.
His tack is probably one too high.
Because he's got the Brewer playbook, doesn't he? He's tack six. Five columns.
And yeah, if you look at the math, it becomes fairly easy for him to set up the situations where he's automatically or very likely hitting his momentous two damage. So the fact that he can do it. And then his maximum influence stat is definitely at least one too high.
Yeah,
I think that's the thing that was highlighted in our last cast was, and Dave touched on it earlier, that having eight, it's just that flexibility of how many times, when you multiply out the damage, I mean, that's 16 kind of damage you can effectively get with eight momentum back in your court. So it's just compared to all the other captains being six, that's huge. I think the one I find playing into, so Dave's played a lot of morticians, and I've come up against Obelus a bit. The one I find is the unpredictable movement plus 2-inch melee. I think that just making him so hard to kill, and even if you do get in on that, he can just counter, hit you, and double dodge out anyway.
Yeah, especially the fact that, and this is a big change from War Machine, that the abilities like that work when you're knocked down.
Yeah.
So I think if unpredictable were to not work if you were knocked down, I don't think that would be such a big culprit.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's a bit dissonant, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't seem to fit with how it should play out. I mean, you've knocked somebody down, they're not going anywhere. But, that rule's always struck me as a little odd.
It was worse with the don't touch the hair. I think that was when it was completely broken, so.
Yeah, that card. Yeah. Do you think sort of having a background in, I guess, competitive War Machine helped with tournaments like this? I mean, how does that, that psychological element, how does that play into sort of these major tournaments?
I think it helps quite a bit, and in fact, my background is also in competitive chess, which I think also helps, especially with the one-after-one activations and the time management.
Right. So, how did you get into competitive chess playing? I mean, that seems like a great background.
I started in high school, actually. I started playing, started on the chess team in high school, and just sort of stuck with it for a while.
Right. Do you find that there's concepts that translate into other games from chess?
Absolutely, especially the concepts of initiative and tempo, which sometimes are more important than the math that you can bring to bear in a game like this.
Did you want to expand on that? I find this a really interesting point. Did you want to expand on the tempo and initiative?
Sure. So initiative beyond, winning first turn is essentially forcing your opponent to react to the moves that you're doing. And so this can create overloads where you essentially have to take two separate actions at the same time but can only choose one. Therefore, your opponent is basically choosing which bad thing happens to him.
Yeah.
So when you can overload somebody. So having initiative like that can really put pressure on your opponent. And then tempo is just getting a sense of the back and forth of the game. In chess, it's a little bit more concrete because you have the move number. But essentially, it can be similarly concrete with a one-after-one move system. So you have, your opponent has to move certain pieces at a certain time, and you can sort of take advantage of that.
Mm. So we spoke to Trent Dennison in our first episode, and he had this idea of providing your opponent with no good choices, which I think is probably similar to what you're saying. I mean, if I hear you right, it's like getting a piece into check in chess. So you're forcing them to move that piece out of check rather than taking the activation that they want to take. It's funny how, you come to it from this kind of formal discipline almost, and Trent, who hasn't got a background in competitive chess playing, has made the same realization. But, it absolutely bears out. If you can provide your opponent with no good options, then you're that much better off to executing your own game plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also makes it a lot... if you're not necessarily objectively better, just playing with the initiative is just easier. It's easier on your time. It's easier psychologically.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I've definitely noticed that games where you can see certain things will tilt it back one way or the other, or when a game's, in the balance and you can kind of feel that the initiative's up for grabs, and as soon as you gain the momentum, and not the actual gaming momentum, but you can just feel a difference in the game and you can start pushing them around. I mean, one of the ones, and maybe this is another... OP Morticians thing, but Silence's ability to basically straight up force certain activation orders on your opponent, that I think is massive. And so I've found playing into that, like if they, you know, if they hit a tuck or a shutout on a model I want to go first, you know, it can just be hugely damaging and basically put you in that, you know, chasing kind of position for the rest of the game.
Absolutely. And one thing I've noticed about that is the difference between good use of silence and bad use, because I've played against a number of people who will use those abilities, but often they'll tuck the model I want to go first or shut off the model I want to go last.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah. You know, knowing what you're, you know, sort of like in poker, you want to know what your opponent wants you to do and do the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that comes with repetition of play and that kind of thing, where you've actually played the matchup that many times, you kind of know, you know, you've seen most of the tricks and you know what order they're going to do things in.
Yeah, it certainly helps. And just the ability to calculate all the possibilities out is important.
So did you come up against or see much Midas? Because I don't know, when the conversation about you know, OP or at least high powered captains comes around, he's one that's usually in the conversation. Was there much Midas around? Or
I did play one game against Midas when I was playing in the qualifier with Union with Vet Rage,
yep.
And I was able to win that game reasonably easily, and I actually don't consider Midas to be a particularly good captain. I think Alchemists are probably the weakest team outside of Hunters.
Fine. Ooh, hello.
In your face.
Yeah, that's got to hurt, Campbell. That's got to hurt.
Yeah, yeah. So specifically why they, you know, they're basically pillow-fisted when it comes to the fist fight, or?
I think it has a lot to do with the general lack of momentum the team generates. You know, they're propped up by one amazing player in Vitriol.
Yeah, yeah.
Who also, you really have to really set it up for her to even generate any momentous damage, even though she can do quite a lot of damage.
Yeah, when she's just generally punching, you really, yeah, exactly. You need to basically set it up to get to her fifth column on the playbook. Otherwise, it just doesn't get you the momentum as well. Hmm. I mean, she can beat people down, but yeah, I see what you're saying there. I mean, Midas, I don't know. I do think he's pretty strong. I think Smoke might see more, you know, prevalence of her. But once again, there are some massive gaping holes in terms of, you know, damage or just attack for captain as well.
Yeah, and this is a team I play too. Alchemists are one of the teams I play, and they're probably the team I enjoy the least playing.
And any reasons specifically for that? That momentum issue, or?
That's definitely a part of it. The lack of hitting power, as you said. Smoke, I find infuriating. I just think she's terrible.
Far out. There you go.
For Smoke to work, you have to bring all of the worst players. I mean, I think this probably changes when Vet Catalyst comes out. But as it stands now, you have to take, like, I mean, if you're not taking Mercury, what is she really doing? But then you're stuck with Mercury.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Man, you are slaughtering all of Campbell's sacred cows.
I know. Right, I'm going to go home and cry in a second.
So why do you think Hunters are so weak? Because I'd play a lot of Hunters and particularly Fond. I found them very difficult, but I'd be keen to hear your thoughts.
I think they're just far too limited. You know, they don't have enough players, and they suffer from a pretty weak captain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think mechanically they're fine, and, you know, down the line when they expand, they'll be just fine. But, you know, they're just too limited.
What about Theron in particular do you feel is weak?
Unlike other good ranged captains, he doesn't have a good way to generate momentum. You know, Sunstrike, you know, spending one influence to generate one momentum seems pretty inefficient. Mm. And he's a little bit squishy, but his forest is in theory a great idea, but at least the way terrain is placed in tournaments in the U.S., with the 3-inch restriction, it feels like there's never a useful place you can put his forest down. Hmm. And then, even though he's the forest captain, he's not even light-footed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, that's a fair point.
He can see through them, he just can't do anything to get to the other side of them.
Hmm. Do you feel he... I mean, my frustration with him from the early days, or when I was playing him early on in the piece, was that... you know, you could never really reliably generate momentum, but I started switching up the playstyle a bit in that he'd use his ranged character plays early and then engage and punch people to put snared up, and that seems to be working a lot better because he can take a bit of a beating.
Yeah, and you absolutely have to play him that way. If he just sits back and shoots range blades all the time, then
you're wasting influence.
Yeah, he's just terrible.
Yeah.
But the problem is he's not nearly as good once engaged as many, many other captains.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Momentous 2 on the 3, fantastic. But, I mean, you look at your hammers, your fillets, your everyone else pretty much. They just
generate... And the lack of legendary play, too.
Yeah, that does hurt. I have noticed that. I mean, I almost feel like Theron and Hearn together make one captain, if you follow my meaning. But it's spread out over 2 players, and it's nowhere near as powerful as something like, you know, Obulus's legendary, or, you know, Brewer legendaries, or, you know, for that matter, like even Smoke's legendary is great. You just don't have that one turn of immense power to help you when you need it most.
And I don't even usually consider taking Hearn, simply because I like the bear too much. And yeah, that's the other thing. Not only are they a momentum starved team, they're an influence starved team.
Mm. Yeah, it's like Steamforged went, all right, here's a team you can play on hard mode.
Yeah.
I really like them, though, and I get the feeling that we'll get a Season 2 captain, you know, towards the end of the year or the start of next year, based on some of the stuff that Matt Hart was saying over the last weekend, sort of hinting at a new captain coming out, and I can't see why that wouldn't be a second Hunter's captain.
Yeah, and I think the design space is there for them. And one other thing, though, is their union access is very, very light. And
yeah.
Which I find hurts them, as union are just incredibly strong. You know, you have gutter teams and non-gutter teams.
Oh, she's amazing. I mean, they do have access to Avarice and Greed, which, you know, everybody does. But, yeah, no, you're dead right. Minx is an interesting kind of sideboard piece. But, you know, I don't know why you'd take her over... any other option that you've got in the Hunter's team?
Yeah, I mean, she's some momentous damage in melee, and she's efficient, I think, which is, you know, Hunters really struggle with influence-efficient players.
Mm.
Yeah, she brings 2 and then obviously has the free charge, so you can just use her as a influence battery if you want to.
So, do you predominantly play Blackheart Union or Vet Rage Union?
I split it up, actually. I play them both about evenly. I'm enjoying Vet Rage a little bit more right now, though.
Mm. Any particular reason?
He's actually he's a very efficient, very flexible captain who can do pretty absurd amounts of damage in a single activation. And Rising Anger is, I think, what really tips him over the edge, because it makes him just a little bit harder to control than you'd like.
Hmm. Yeah, we were talking to Trent Dennison, and he's running this Vet Rage team with Harry the Hat in it for Rising Anger. In the same way that, like, you know, Ghast's Rising Anger is useful. You know, I think it's just, like, getting an out-of-activation momentum generation is incredible.
Yeah, but then, you know, at least Ghast isn't a 100-pound anchor around your ankle, you know.
Yeah. there's just no love for Harry.
No,
I do love the hat. It's a fantastic hat. Wow.
It is a fantastic. I'm still baffled by the fact that he's got this giant wrench and he's about 7 foot tall model, and he's got a 1-inch melee. Like, that's I think even, you know, possibly a 2-inch melee might tip him into the I might putting him on my bench, but no, he's just trash.
His momentous damage isn't until like 6 on his playbook, and
yeah,
you know, he only generates 1 influence a turn.
Yeah, there's so much wrong with him. Mm-hmm. So if you're gonna rank the teams, then obviously you've given us indication of you know, the Hunters and the Alchemists at the bottom end, I'm going to make the assumption that Morticians would be at the top. What are you kind of, you know, you don't have to put them completely in order, but what teams would you put at the top and then kind of middle and bottom?
I would say that Union and Butchers are also in the top tier.
Yep.
I would say probably Brewers, Masons, and this is interesting, actually, now that I think about it. Brewers, let's say Brewers, Masons, and Engineers would be in the middle.
You can split it up.
I would say Brewers, Masons, Engineers, and Fish would all be in the middle, with Alchemists and Hunters at the bottom.
Yep.
So engineers obviously cop a bit of shit. Do you play Ballista or do you play Pinvice?
I play just Ballista. I absolutely hate Pinvice.
Okay. And how do you sort of roll that gameplay out? I mean, I see Ballista as a pretty decent control captain, but how are you playing him?
Yeah, so I've sort of landed on a six that I really like, and I occasionally sub in Avarice and Greed, but the way I play him is with Gutter, Rage, Salvo, and Velocity.
Mm.
And the idea is you just sort of hold the ball with a nimble velocity, which it's pretty hard to get back from, while Ballista and Salvo sort of control the field and prevent pieces from coming in on your Rage and your Gutter, and allow, when you can get Rage rolling, he can really do a ton of damage, and quite frequently they can prevent anyone from controlling your Rage.
Man, I'd love that lineup. In fact, I want to play that.
I reckon we play that next time we play, Dave. That sounds really good.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I love that Rage Gutter combo. Just that little bit of threat extension that Gutter gives through dragging models in as well.
Yeah, and I love how they nerfed her, and some people were like, "Oh, now she's garbage." She's still completely good. Like,
she's absurd. And knocking players down and controlling pushing them can also, you can set up some pretty absurd scything blows, which are made much easier to get off.
Yeah.
And how do you find the experience of rolling that out?
I've been extremely successful with that.
Mm. Any particular bad matchups?
Obulus.
I don't think I've lost that matchup against Obulus. I think it's not, because it's a matchup in which you can actually just kill Obulus.
Mm. Yeah, that's a fair point.
Which is rare. Your ranged power is so strong, and especially with tooling up Ballista, he just pretty much automatically does 7 damage on the first turn.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good point as well. I mean, having access to tooled up is very, very powerful. Both for Obulus, for anybody really, but particularly for some of those captains who, can use that little extra bit of juice. But on a character, on a ranged character play as well. Like, you even see it with Fillet. Like, if you take Rage in a Fillet lineup, she's suddenly throwing out ranged character plays that, trigger damage and bleeding. And, I mean, that's just fucking amazing.
Yeah, cool. And it also doesn't help when she does momentous 4 damage on 3 with the tooled up
small blood. Yeah, it's broken. That's broken. There you go. You're going to put down the Morts for a while? You're done with them? You're bored? Or you just
had my local group has sort of initiated an Obulus ceasefire.
Right, it's a detente. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I love that.
Right.
Everyone, pick up your dead, take them back, no worries.
So there might be a little scalpel here and there, but I'm not a huge fan of scalpels, so I would expect to be playing mostly Engineers, Union, and Fish, I would say.
Yeah, fair enough.
Do you find that's a big deal? I mean, this is something I've noticed. We've come from a War Machine background, but obviously in War Machines, the knowledge level is quite a lot higher in terms of models. Do you find that it's a lot easier to jump around, from guild to guild and, play a bit of this, bit of that because of the lower model count?
I definitely, yeah, especially since I'm still relatively new at the game. I've been playing for about 3 months or so. So I feel pretty comfortable playing just about anything at this point. And that's a huge help from War Machine is, one of my strengths as a gamer is my memory. So I spent a long time working on memorizing everything in War Machine. And it's just so much easier to do in this game.
Yeah. So 3 months and then US champ. Fantastic.
Wow. That's a Cinderella story right there.
That is. Go all the way to the Worlds. So I like it.
I've been playing miniature games for about 14 years, so.
Yeah, well, I think the chess background speaks for itself as well. I mean, you watch the way Guild Ball rolls out, and there's plenty of similarities in terms of the turn-by-turn. So, I would dare say that you probably don't clock out that often because you're so used to that, way of playing.
Yeah, in fact, it's never happened in War Machine or Guild Ball because
almost
all of the chess I play now is Blitz chess on the internet, so.
Right.
Fuck that.
Wow, yeah. Wow. So when you look at the international competition you might be up against, are there any particular players that stand out for you?
I actually have no idea. I'm pretty much entirely out of the scene, as it were.
Hmm.
I know Trent. I met Trent Denison playing in Seattle for the Iron Gauntlet, but other than that, I don't really know any of these other players. You know, I knew some of the players from War Machine, but that's about it.
Mm. I think they're only. How many titles have been decided so far, though? I think the Canadian one, is that right? Is there any others? I'm just trying to remember now.
I'm not sure that the UK one's been decided yet. I don't know.
The Australian one's in September, so we'll be heading up for that. So you never know. You might end up playing one of us.
Oh, damn, I've given away all my attack now.
Confidence. I love it.
Yeah, right.
I play Alkies. I won't make it to the final.
I was going to play Hunters, but now I'm not so sure. Now I actually really want to play Engineers. Fuck. I haven't wanted to play them for a long time, but that's really got me thinking. Looking forward to Mother coming out. I think that's going to be a great piece.
I mean, it's certainly improvement on Mainspring, who does nothing, but I don't know about a great piece. It's a solid mascot.
Hmm.
The traps are going to be pretty helpful.
The traps are awesome, yeah. Like, having played a bit of Hunters now, just that ability to control the field a bit more, I really like that. You know, If we're talking about forcing people into bad decisions, then I think it's just a little bit more in the toolbox, which is useful. And you don't give away two victory points when you blow your mascot up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun. Everybody likes to explode things and set things on fire, but yeah, I don't like the cost of it. I don't know. What was the Gen Con experience like, just in terms of the actual event itself? I mean, we've not been there, but I get the impression that it's just a massive weekend.
Oh, it's so big. You get to the convention center. I got there Wednesday night at about 10:30 to stand in line for my badge, and the line had more people than just about any other convention I've ever been to.
Wow.
I mean, it's talking. There's probably there are multiple thousands of people just in line for their badge.
Hmm.
But they actually keep it moving really fast. It only took about 45 minutes to stand in line.
Hmm. What does it smell like?
it's so big that even though there's so many people, it's a pretty sterile environment that I've found.
Well, that's very reassuring because personal
a sweaty
hygiene.
Campus. Yeah, a lot of sweaty campus in one room.
Yeah. Was there a big turnout for other systems? Like, did Warmer Hordes get a big turnout for the weekend?
I was over there for a little while. It seemed like they had a pretty decent turnout, and yeah, I know Magic always has a big turnout, and they're always just a legion of people playing whatever the new hot board games are at the time. So I think I heard a little over 60,000 people for the weekend.
Jeez, that's impressive.
Oh, right. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, we don't have anything on that scale down here, unfortunately.
Our population's about a tenth, isn't it? Westland, so.
Yeah, it's not quite as big. Really keen to get over at some point, time and money permitting. Anything else that you sort of wanted to comment on, Jordan? You know, any other insights or, you know, did you want to make any declarative statements about the state of the game?
Oh, I hadn't done that already. No, I mean it's definitely a good game that I enjoy. It's a little bit lighter than War Machine. I think there are a couple of very specific balance issues that exist with the game right now, but I have confidence that those will be addressed.
Right. Did you want to talk about them in detail?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Mm-hmm. I think our group at least has come to the consensus that there's just a problem that exists in the game with turn one, and that the kick received disparity is so large. You're talking about just the difference between kicking and receiving can be an 8-inch difference on your threat range for any given model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then especially, you know, if you're playing Everest Greed and your opponent isn't, you know, you get the ball plus last activation.
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree.
There really isn't any incentive to enter any of your opponent's threat ranges, as far as I can tell.
Yes.
What, have you got to the point where you've thought about, you know, what other... what things could be done to kind of balance that out in terms of maybe, you know, the give and go and those things being a lesser distance, or it's just simply having the ball is the issue?
Yeah, and one consideration I've had was just eliminating momentous teamwork actions on turn one.
That's not a bad idea.
Or, yeah, there are a few other things we've been kicking around, and, or having potentially a similar thing you can have on defense. You know, there has to be some mitigation for kicking off, and right now it seems to be such a strong negative in the vast majority of matchups that you're putting so much on just a single die roll.
Yeah, and I do find that in matchups that I'm receiving the ball, you'll start the game with a smile on your face and be quite happy that you can then start that that pressure kind of scenario where you get to play your style of game. I mean, it's pretty much only, you know, Obelus is, you know, the Morticians are the only ones that I can see that don't mind kicking off and basically then controlling the game from that perspective.
Yeah, there are a few. Obelus certainly, you know, he can just get the ball back immediately, I think. Yeah. Shark threatens, but ultimately still would rather receive. And I don't hate kicking off with Ballista simply because I can just go first and knock some stuff down, which can be annoying. But yeah, ultimately it's I don't think there's a single team that I think it's better to kick than receive with. And it's just especially considering that, I don't know about where you guys play, but in American tournaments, terrain tends to be fairly symmetrical, so choosing sides is not hugely impactful.
Yeah, agreed. We've kind of fallen into a pattern where the terrain is generally pretty symmetrical. There might be, like you said in one of your games earlier, you know, there might be a fast terrain on one side, you know, that'll help you get back into, you know, the game for a taken out model, but that's about it. We also don't probably play as much terrain. I remember looking at the organized play document, and you know the recommendation is kind of upwards of 6 or 7, isn't it, something like that, and often we'll play with, you know, maybe 5 pieces of terrain, which is probably not optimal for, you know, being able to use that terrain and really understand the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure each tournament organizer has his own preference for how he likes the terrain rolled out, but yeah, that's what I've noticed, is that, and I don't think it's meant to be quite as impactful as it was in War Machine. Just the effects of terrain simply aren't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the kick receive disparity. Any other balance issues?
I think the model balance is pretty good. Like I said, I think Obelus and Avarice and Greed are problems. I think there should be maybe a little bit more restriction on friendly faction or friendly guild, I suppose. I think Union Access, the way that you can just use any, you know, you can basically play a Union team with various captains and mascots, I'm not a huge fan of. I think my proposal was to restrict it to having only 2 Union players in your 8.
That's a good idea. And that way, at least, it forces you to choose the 2 that are, you know, going to synergize best, and I guess you don't lose that theme of the team.
Yeah, because essentially they're not Union players, right? They're just players for all of those teams. There's virtually no restriction. You know, so few of the abilities are friendly guild that it feels like they're just a member of that guild.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the, you know, early on, I think Midas used to have that, where it was basically, you know, Midas Union is essentially what you'd play. So
yeah, Midas, Vitriol, and 3 Union players. There's nothing wrong with that line.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's strong.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that idea of how to balance kicking versus receiving, and it's something we touched on in the last cast. I think it's a good point. It's well made. You know, and I guess you back it up with some pretty decent knowledge of other systems, and particularly a game like chess, which is deeply symmetrical. You know, I don't know how you'd fix it, but it's certainly food for thought.
Yeah, so that's sort of where my head is in terms of game balance. I think that's sort of the consensus that the Chicago group has come to for the most part. Mm. But we're all still really enjoying the game, and it's good fun.
Mm. It is. Did you check out Taters, the first release for the Farmers? I mean, it looks a bit comical from my point of view, but did you check him out?
Yeah, I did look at the card. It'll be interesting to see how the whole faction revolves around these harvest tokens. I don't know if I'm sure the card is floating out there on the internet somewhere. People have read. And it's also good to have, we finally have a charmed female model. So apparently women in this game can be attracted to men.
Yes.
Well, he is very handsome. He's a very handsome model.
But other than that, I didn't think he was great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's kind of first of a guild.
Oh, and you've got to see, you know, how the rest of the players and
the guild. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can't make a judgment yet, for sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I heard, so there was an interview, I think it's floating around online, with Matt and Rich, when he mentioned about releasing two new guilds for Season 3. Do any thoughts on what the other one is? And just out of interest,
I really haven't read. I know that other guilds exist in the fluff, I've been told, but I haven't actually read any of it, so I really don't have any idea.
Because I had a look on their Steam Forged or for SteamCon, and they've actually got part of it. You can go and pitch ideas of new guilds to Matt and Rich. So I might flirt with that idea. I've always had this idea of like a Leper's Guild or something like that. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, Leper's Guild Captain, Legendary, pull my finger.
Yeah.
I know that a friend of mine really wants it to be the Fool's Guild.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That'd be alright.
Yeah, Thieves Guild's another idea that I would like to see put into practice. Stealing influence, that'd be fun.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Look, I don't have any other questions. I mean, I think, you know, that's been really interesting to hear. You know, you recap your Gen Con experience and some of your thoughts on the game, and very, very appreciative of you making time for us.
Yeah,
not a problem. This was fun. We have to do it.
Well, I imagine you're going to have a few of these lined up, mate. There's probably a number of people who want to talk to you.
Well, I'll make sure to have worse answers for everybody.
Fantastic. That's well, maybe chat to you after. I know it's a bit of a way away, but after the Worlds, that'd be good to kind of recap on your experience there.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Awesome.
Nice one. No, thanks again, Jordan. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Anytime.
Kabul!
Kabul!
Alright, what do we got tonight?
Right, well, as part of, the interview we did with one Jordan. I'm going to miss
Knack. It's a hard CH.
Yeah. We did manage to offend him on that,
Yeah, I'm going
to
edit that bit out.
Yeah. so he had a suggestion of an engineer's kind of build that you took a bit of a liking to. So we thought we'd roll that out, and I'm going to mess around with some Corsair fishermen just to see how it kind of goes down.
Yeah, so that engineer's build is Ballista and Mainspring. I would like to proxy Mother for it, but I think I'll just go with Mainspring. And then Salvo, Velocity, Rage, and Gutter. So I guess there's a few things that pop out. You know, Rage being able to put tooled up on Ballista or on Salvo, probably Ballista, is good. Velocity is a good ball holder. Gutter is Gutter.
Yeah.
You know, Salvo provides that range knockdown. Nice. He's pretty good as well. So it should be interesting. I mean, I tested it out on Vassal last night with Byron.
Yep.
And I got flogged, partly because I'm, you know, I haven't played Engineers for a while, and I was a bit rusty, and partly because, like, you know, he's better than me, and Ballista has limitations. So. Yeah.
Well, you know, at least I guess you'll take that knowledge into the game and, you know, see how you go. I mean, it has been ages since you played any form of Engineers. So.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, when you play a team for a long time, you have a different kind of muscle memory.
Yep.
And so, like, having played Hunters a lot, I guess I was trying to force Ballista up the pitch in the game that I played last night, which may or may not have been the right thing to do, given that his playbook is actually pretty shitty when he gets engaged.
Yeah. With Engineers, they've got great kicking stats in terms of the dice they can roll, but their attack is just garbage. I mean, his might be all right, but generally it's pretty garbage.
It's only okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're playing some Corsair?
Corsair, I'm doing a bit of Corsair. I got Tentacles last week, or the end of last week, so Tentacles is painted up. So it'll be Corsair, obviously Tentacles. Sorry, Salt, I will play you again at some point in time. maybe not for years. And then I was going to go for a bit of a balanced kind of build, you know, a bit shooty, a bit killy. I haven't decided the 6, but the 8 is basically Grayscales, Jack, Sakana, Siren, and then looking to have Avian Greed and Gutter as the other two. I like the idea of Gutter's Chain Grab plus Harpoon, plus that extra damage if you kind of want to skew that way.
Yeah. So,
and Avian Greed, I don't know. If you're going to, it's a bit of a take on the Attritionman style, but instead of having the Fangtooth Kraken set up, having Abby, because if he basically hits and gets the singled out, plus two tack to Corsair is unbelievable. He's already got a Brewer playbook, so then plus two means he's probably going to wrap. He's just going to hopefully kill the fuck out of a few things. So.
Yep, he can get it done.
He's good. I like him.
Yeah. Siren is great. I really like her. I mean, she's got like a three-long playbook, somebody else who could benefit from singled out as well.
Yes, and defensively, she's not bad, although given Ballista's ranged attacks, well, at least one of them is a AoE that her defensive ability won't kind of trigger on that minus five to range because you're not directly targeting her.
Yeah.
But she's pretty good. And the other thing I kind of noticed as I was like looking and going, oh, do I put Angel in? Yes, no. With the legendary, everyone becomes, you know, essentially a 4/8 kick anyway. So, you know, do you actually need that ridiculous kick stat? I mean, you're probably going to line up and try to shoot with a Corsair or maybe just trigger one and then ping pong off someone else for some snapshots. So,
I
guess we'll have to see how that kind of plays out.
Yeah, I really like Siren more and more. Seduced is actually an amazing play.
Yeah.
And Byron used it on me last night. I had Velocity holding the ball with Nimble up, so def 6. And he threw a Seduced at her and jagged the 6. And, I think that was the game right there.
Passes back to you.
Yeah.
To himself. Yeah, it's pretty good. And I like... I'll definitely play Siren. I like that plus Corsair's Rough Seas. So you just have the ability to steal the ball off people. I kind of like that. When I go, I mean, I played that a little bit when Corsair came out. And when I go back and play Alkies, I have that one thing, you know, when you were talking about the muscle memory earlier, I almost want to reach for that ability, but I don't have it. You know, and I find that a really great part of your arsenal, you know, something in the toolbox that's really handy.
Yeah. So you sound a bit blocked up tonight, Cam.
Yeah, I know. It's my cocaine habits kicking in, unfortunately. So.
I mean, there's nothing like just doing massive rails and then driving in a reasonably challenging hillside environment.
Yeah, and pick out traffic. It's great.
Yeah, man. Not dead yet.
No, we still managed to get there somehow. So.
Yeah.
Go up to the church to get our fix.
Coke ball.
It's
not 8 ball? So Ballista, I'm so conflicted about this guy.
So what were some of the takeaway messages other than the not setting him in you got from last year?
It was that whole when your character plays miss thing with the engineers, you know, like theoretically range knockdown and momentum generation is amazing, but when you miss, it feels bad. You know, you waste your influence and you don't get anything to show for it, and you're basically just left hanging in the breeze.
Cool.
I don't think I used Rage or Gutter very well, or maybe the converse is true. Like, Byron shut Rage down very well and limited how much damage Gutter could do. So tonight I'll be looking to, I guess, use Ballista and Salvo as the facilitators to set up Rage and Gutter.
Work them together.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, you look at that range knockdown and push, you do have the ability to set up some pretty interesting situations with Scything Blow and Flurry.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what I'll be looking to do if I can pull it off. But again, you know, it's been a while since I've played these guys in any sort of real capacity.
Yeah.
And I'm not I'm not particularly good with them, so I'll do my best. We'll see what happens.
Oh, it'll be an interesting game. I mean, I haven't played the Fish for quite a while. Of course, I think one of my aims is going to be to score a goal with Tentacles. Just live the dream. I mean, on a legendary turn, he basically goes to a 3-8 kick, which is unbelievable. So yep. I want to see it happen.
I want to see it happen.
Yeah.
In fact, my money's on you for this game.
Yeah. I reckon I'll try to ping pong the ball around and play that scoring game. I mean, I think last time I played him, it was when I fell into realising how much of a beater the Corsair actually is.
He's very good.
Yeah, so I think that's where it might go. I mean, I'll be probably looking for I generally look for a 2-2 game, but if you get to a 3-1 game, so the 4-1 and the 4 takeouts might be the way this lineup kind of rolls out.
Yeah, but I mean, a three goal game is possible, a 2-2 game is possible, yeah. A 1-4 game is possible. I mean, you leave a lot of options on the table in terms of how you want to tackle it.
Yeah, I think popping the legendary is an interesting one. I find with Corsair, you want to do it. Ultimately, you want to basically start, say, a turn two or turn three. He goes first, generates a bunch of momentum, knocks some people down, pops it, and he's sitting in the middle of the park, right?
Yeah.
You've freed up some space, knocked down, tied up a few of the opposition, and then you've got the rest of the turn to basically utilise that, either ping-ponging the ball off someone for a snapshot, or he's already gone and scored a goal, and really work off that and get multiple goals in one turn. But I found you don't always do that. You know, often I'll just pop it basically to facilitate one goal.
Yep.
So I'll see how it kind of rolls.
I mean, that's an argument there about, you know, whether one legendary is worth 4 points. And yeah. I think, you know, and potentially 6 points.
Yeah.
You know, if you set it up right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you, depending upon, obviously, the roll-off, who goes first, which was an interesting conversation itself that we had with Jordan.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm receiving, I should be able to facilitate a second turn, you know, early goal. And so then it's how do you kind of, you know, work that with beating someone's face in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think unlike Sharkfish, you know, he just gives you a bit more tactical flexibility in terms of how you want to go about winning the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I still love the Sharkfish, and I had a bit of a rethink. I went through the forums today, and I was just looking at some people's recap of Gen Con, and one person was writing their experience with Fish, and it was interesting to see the Shark, you know, basically in the Masters format with the two captains.
Yep.
That I reckon Shark Corsair is actually a really good combination.
Yep.
Because if you come up against someone that you know can't, or will struggle against a full scoring team, then you just drop Shark and you just play some football. And if you don't, Corsair is just such a facilitator of a multitude of different ways of playing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like you said before, it could be a, you know, a 4-1 game, it could be a 3-goal game. He could still, you know, play different ways.
Yeah, it's nice to have a toolbox.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas Ballista, he's got that one big turn where, you know, he can drop his minefield and potentially do a lot of damage, but it never really seems to play out that way. I mean, all it seems to do is keep things in place for one more turn. So
it's a bit of a control feat.
It's a control feat. It's a control feat. It's a control legendary.
Listen to us. Bit of war machine.
Yeah. But you know, it then begs the question of, how do you exploit that? And that's not something that I've given a lot of thought to, really. I think I'll just kind of wing it and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. Yeah, interesting matchup. So.
I want to declaratively state this is not my preferred team to play. I'm so disappointed by Engineers every time I play them. I played Pimvice a couple of times. She seemed alright, but not interesting enough for me to want to play her in any great capacity.
What I found interesting about our chat with Jordan was, and this is the meta thing that he did talk about, you know, their meta, and you saw where the strengths and weaknesses were. And I found it interesting that, for example, he did not rate Pinvice at all, which, I don't know, I've never played Pinvice, but I can see some, you know, positives there. But also didn't rate, you know, Alkies, so, yeah.
So I had a chat with Byron about Pinvice last night, and he kind of expressed the point of view that he didn't like her very much because of the fact that to do anything good, she needs to damage her own team.
Yeah.
And there's no way you can heal them that damage effectively. So you basically leave your team weaker by using her character plays.
Yeah, that's a valid point. And then, you know, if you are healing them in some capacity, it's costing you momentum.
It's costing you, yeah.
So then you've got to either be a team that generates a heap of momentum to be able to do it, or, you know, just lose that momentum race.
Yeah, I mean, going back to that point about different metas, I wonder whether the Chicago meta that Jordan was talking to us about is more focused on, I guess, a more aggressive kind of fight style of play, yeah, as opposed to a score style.
Yeah, it's probably pretty valid. I did kind of notice that in the way. I mean, well, it's an obvious meta, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, what they've been tacking for, at least for Gen Con, yeah.
Yeah, and so, and it does kind of skew that way. I was thinking about, you know, I have this issue with four dice shots a goal, but I was thinking about just the maths on that. And so statistically, it's, you know, pretty likely that you're going to score. You're going to miss occasionally. When it comes to takeouts, okay, the reward is less. It's half of what a goal is, right? Unless you've got certain players. But the redundancy you can build into a player to guarantee the takeout is a lot easier. So, for example, you can't get base-to-base with a goal very often and do that, you know, obulus tech where you've got multiple momentum and, you know, have multiple shots at goal. Once you've had the shot, the ball's gone.
Yep.
With beating someone down, you can go, right, I need to get X amount of damage on them. I can, you know, you can always add extra influence. And then also, you know, what you roll, you might only need two successes, and on average you'd be looking at, say, four. So there's an easier way of kind of getting to that victory condition, even though it's less. Mathematically, like, more reliable, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and I guess shooting goal costs you momentum, whereas taking out a player generates you momentum.
Yeah.
You know, and if that sort of plays into a kind of concept of tempo and winning the next turn, being able to take first activation for the following turn, you can see the attractiveness of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, it does take more activations to get 4 points via takeouts than it does scoring a goal.
Yeah,
so, I mean, you just got to... I don't know. I mean, I see where you're coming from. Like, if you're holding the ball, taking out a player can be a better approach.
Yes.
Yeah, you've really got to time when you want to shoot for it.
Yeah, I think I've learned that a lot lately. It's, yeah, timing your goals. I mean, you talk about that six-point activation. It's crucial to be able to do that. It's also that influences the momentum, or, you know, that flow of the game and who kind of has the upper hand. And I just think, you know, the ball is such a good resource, you just don't want to get rid of it necessarily.
You don't want to give it away.
You know, it's almost like you only want to take shots, unless it's a dire situation at the end of a game where you're down on clock or something. You just don't want to give it away and do a two-dice shot or nothing. You want to be looking for that four-dice shot or more.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It is a fast way to win, though.
It is.
Four points is big.
That's what makes the game so good, I guess.
Yeah. So my prediction tonight, resounding Corsair victory.
Far out. Yeah, I reckon it might be a bit closer than that. I don't know. I think I would think naturally in the matchup that Corsair is the favourite. So, yeah, let's say 12-8, something like that.
Mm. Yeah, okay. All right, I'll take 12-8.
All right, no worries.
Yeah, all right, man. Well, we're just about there.
So easy. So we'll pull up and we'll do a recap after.
Woo. All right.
Guild Ball.
All right, man. All right. We've got two games in tonight.
Yeah, no, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. Oh, no, I think we're both getting pretty quick at playing, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I like the second one more than the first one.
I like the first one more than the second one, which is unsurprising. So,
on reflection, engineers. I do not like engineers.
Yeah, Dave was cursing from about halfway through... the first game, mainly for, you know, really good dice, shooting a goal, rolling badly. I fucking hate dice. So,
there's nothing worse than, like, taking what should be a pretty good goal and just missing it, taking a shot on goal and missing.
Well, especially when you spend time to engineer it as well. So in terms of, you know, making sure that you've, you know, worked out and spend multiple activations to get the ball in the right spot. And if you miss it, then effectively those three or however many activations are all, almost for nothing.
So, yeah. I mean, that first game that we played was the Ballista Engineers into Corsair Fish.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest disappointment for me was missing that goal with velocity, which, you know, probably would have kept me in the game. Yep. I think when I missed that, the game was over.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the end, we ended up 12-8, so I called it.
You did?
It was relatively close, but I think I had the upper hand. I think Corsair does naturally have the upper hand. Yep. I kicked off with Soren. Soren did her little thing, did the kickoff, and then had the ability to obviously steal the ball back and then drop it.
Yes, that seduced play is just incredible.
She's fantastic.
It's amazing.
Such a good model. So,
and you did pretty well with the kickoff as well, because you put me in a situation where you were always going to get that option.
Yeah.
And you, then, know, you gave her 4 influence so that she could pretty much tag anybody who had the ball.
Yeah, exactly. And then get the ball, get them to kick it. I think with that one, I was trying to get away, but I couldn't get away far enough, so I ended up dropping the ball. But I put you in a situation where you could knock me down with a range shot and scatter the ball, but I thought if I drop it behind me, then I've got to drag, effectively tell you that Salvo's got to come up and try to get the ball, which is what you did.
And he just, like, he didn't do anything for the rest of the game, pretty much.
Yeah.
Apart from get punched around.
I mean, one of the big things I worked out, or, you know, obviously it's pretty obvious with the fish being 2-inch melee, but crowding out and getting out is just so good. So Tentacles is great with that as well. You know, manages to kind of just sit in, give you that extra dice. And when Corsair's basically got a Brewer playbook, so tax 6, 5 columns, just gets absolute work done.
It really does, man. Again, like, that's something that when I played Byron in that test game, he did the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Just sucked me in, you know, got me wedged in a whole bunch of 2-inch melee zones, and Corsair went to town.
Yeah, so Corsair beat down Salvo after Salvo tried to get away at one point. Then I manufactured getting the ball out after your missed shot with returning Soren. So Soren did die after going so far forward, but I kind of let that happen. I just let the other pieces do the work. Soren got it, did a bit of moving around, did one touch football to get a bit of distance, kicked to Sakana on a wing, and I thought, oh, this is great, I can set up a goal later on. But did a 4-inch dodge and left Sakana within charge distance of Rage, which was pretty ordinary.
Yep, and to be fair, I think that was probably the only thing that had kept me in the game for as long as I was in it.
Yeah, fair call.
You know, I think that it was pretty much all you that game. But yeah, getting Rage in, knocking you down was quite good, and then he
ball
just kicked the ball
off perfectly straight to
velocity, yeah. Like back where it needed to be. And then my next activation was velocity. I don't know what you did after that, but my next activation was velocity taking a shot on goal, and the momentum race was pretty tight, so I'm like, okay, I'm not going to bonus time this and take a 3-dice shot. You had some stuff hanging around goal,
yeah.
So, you know, drop my dice pool.
Yeah,
missed.
Seems bad.
So I'm basically like, you're 8. You're at 8 and I'm at 4 at that point.
Yeah. It wasn't good. In the end, I think we did derp around a bit more. You got a goal, and then I just basically pushed it out and kicked it up the middle. Sakana kind of punched Rage, got off him, jogged around, grabbed the ball, and then did a shot over a couple of players. Oh, no, straight up the middle, didn't he?
Yep.
And, yeah, for the win. So, look, I think, yeah, like I said, I think the fish has got an advantage there. I don't know, like, what did you feel about the Engies? I mean, you were ragging on them. I didn't see them as much of a threat. There's the knockdown, but I think I kind of had the momentum most of the game.
So here's my problem with Ballista. His character plays are influence to momentum inefficient, in that you will spend 2 to generate 1.
Yeah.
They're dependent on dice. You ideally want to have momentum to bonus time critical shots, which further makes them inefficient.
Yeah.
And his playbook is just garbage. Like, it's, well, maybe that's not fair. His playbook is not great. You know, momentous results, but they're pretty shitty, and he's not going to do much. He's 3-1. He's tough hide. He's going to generate momentum if he's up in, like, mixing it up hand to hand. I just, yeah, I don't know. I don't like him.
So how about we move on to game two then? So we smashed that one out pretty quick, and then we decided to have a second game. I kept with my fish lineup. I actually went with the same lineup, which was Tentacles, Corsair, Sakana, Siren, Avi, and Greed, which I thought was pretty cool for that extra activation, and then naturally Grayscales.
Yeah, God, I hate that guy.
You played your Hunters that you like?
Yeah, I played Hunters. I played the 13 influence team that I've been sort of mucking around with. So Theron, Fahad, Jaykar, who is just the fucking best, Chaska, Ygritte, Avarice, and Greed. I think that's everybody.
Yeah, so same thing kind of happened at the start. I kicked off with Siren. I waited a little bit for you to do a few things then. Your Avarice came up, and then I decided to lure him in. Then you did an activation. Then I got Corsair to Harpoon, drag him in, and I managed to crowd him out by about three or four. And it got a bit silly at one point where my last activation was Grayscales charging in. And with that many dice, he double wrapped, and I was just generating so much momentum.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. At that point, I pretty much just gave up the idea of even winning initiative. You know, I just did shit to try and, you know, either grind your dudes down or put my players in a position for next turn to, you know, do something useful.
Which I think you did pretty well. I mean, we were there in a situation where I kept beating down on Avarice. I had, you know, four guys on him. But then you used Jaykar to kind of use it, do a bit of an effective charge around, or charged Corsair, I think it was.
Yep.
And then pop around, do a few like dodge attacks, get a little bit of damage on the squid tentacles, and then with your back to the shadows, did a really good move of moving straight onto Greed, which I parked next to the goal.
Yeah, so engaged Greed, dropped a trap just to make it like bad for Greed all round.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was good because that set me up the following turn to use Jaykar to kill Greed and then basically walk up and finish off Tentacles, who'd taken a fair bit of damage from Ygritte's flurry and poisons. He'd healed himself up a bit, but he's on five, and I got a bit lucky with the first attack, jagged a three damage result on the playbook, and then killed him with the last attack. So 4-point activation from Jaykar. Like, what a dude.
It took out two models that don't come back, so that was the interesting point. And then I'd kind of geared for a shot of goal with Sakanas. This was after I'd killed Avarice. I'd kick the ball with Corsair out to Sakana and dodge really wide. Sakana at the ball, walked up. I had so much momentum, so I do the, you know, shot, bonus time. He gets four dice. What do I do? Miss a four dice shot.
Yeah. And at that point, you're at 2 points to my eight, I think.
Yeah, 2-8. And I guess the trouble there is I had the middle of the board. Like, I had Grayscales hanging around and Siren. She was a bit further back. But if I score there, you kick the ball out, I've got the opportunity to wrestle it back, and I was in advantageous position. Losing the ball there, which you'd parked for a lot of the game, then it was crunch time. And so you were on 8 points at this point, so you'd scored a goal plus two takeouts.
Yep.
And then you went all in on Siren and went to 10. So it was pretty much done and dusted then and there.
Yeah, so we just called it at that point.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just, the writing's on the wall, and I just accepted my fate.
Yep.
But no, it was a good game. It was actually, yeah, quite interesting to see how it roll out. I don't know with the fish whether you do any changes there. I mean, the massive amount of crowding out was pretty awesome, but Avarice didn't actually do that much. It was mainly Corsair doing all the work.
Yeah.
And he is that super solo. He basically wants to go first. He wants to basically have, you know, all the influence to then generate a whole bunch of momentum. But what it does do is gives the opportunity to do counterattacks and defensive stance when people come into use. So,
yeah. And you sort of see that continuity of design through a lot of Season 2 captains, you know, where they are a lot greedier.
Hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, first, either last activation, first turn captains in Fillet's case, Hammer's case, I guess. First activation, second turn if they can win it. But yeah, you see that consistency across design. They play quite similarly. Man, I know Jordan was talking about Hunters being probably the weakest team, but I just don't see that. I feel like when I play them, I feel much stronger than I do than if I'm playing kind of Engineers. And maybe that's just because I'm familiar with them now, having played them so much. But
yeah, probably a fair point.
I really think they've got some great tools.
Yeah. And it's just, I guess, with the 13 influence, because you've played out the 10 influence side, so the Herd and Cedar build, that you probably feel like you've got more options as well. You know, instead of each model basically only having one thing that they can kind of do, you've got a situation where you can throw it around a bit.
Yeah.
And, J-Car's just a monster. Like, he just gets all over the board. Like, he started in your half, like maybe a couple of inches off the halfway line, which you set up off turn one, and then ends up, you know, basically next to the goal. You know, sitting right next to Kree.
Yeah, right up the other end of the field after his activation.
So if you're clever about where he kind of darts in and out, what dodges you take and that kind of thing, he can basically get anywhere and put you in a good situation. And that probably comes down to where it represents what Jordan was talking about, where you put someone in a situation where it's, you know, they've got to take one or two bad options. You know,
yeah.
What are they going to take? So
he can set it up. But I think, like, the other thing is that, you know, they've got a breadth of tools, right? Chaska can throw up Tough Skin in a clutch situation, or he can boombox. Like, I think people might have some blinkers with regard to, you know, all right, let's get a 12 damage activation out of Chaska. It's like, yeah, it's possible, but you've really got to judge as to when you would do it and why you would do it.
Yeah, I mean, so I've only played a couple of Hunters games. I would assume you would be looking for that for the takeout. You know, maybe the double boombox if someone's below, you know, 8, you know, on a 8 or a 7, you could knock them out pretty quick.
Yeah. But I feel like playing them is like, okay, what does the board look like? What can my stuff do? And they do have some good options. Whereas when I was playing Engineers, and this may be because I'm not as familiar with them, I just feel like I have no power. Like, I have nothing near the same level of power that the Hunters can bring.
Yeah.
You know, like, Ballista's all right. You know, compared to Theron, I think Theron's probably better.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because some of the things you mentioned, that poor trading off of influence to momentum, is an issue I come across when I play my smoke list. Is, you know, you're throwing out an AOE or, you know, a fire blast for two influence, and you can only get one momentum back for it. And it does become a bit of a, okay, so how do I generate my momentum? And I can notice the difference when I play Corsair. I mean, like that first turn where I just went in all in on Avarice, I got to 8 momentum. Like, I don't think I ever get to that on smoke.
That was fucking brutal, man.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
The triple rally, you know, the wrap twice, so three momentous results.
Yeah. I had this moment where I looked at all the dudes around him. I'm like, I just should let him go now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go off into the night, friend.
He did take a beating, though, because obviously, you know, Tough Hide's pretty strong.
Yeah.
And Corsair, even when he was wrapping, he was only wrapping to about column one or two. Column one is nothing, because one damage goes to zero.
Yeah.
So it did take a little bit, but the whole time I'm able to, you know, knock down. And
yeah, just print momentum off him.
Yeah.
Yep. And those wraps are brutal, man. They're just fucking brutal.
I love it.
No, you did well.
It was a good two games.
Yeah, I feel like I didn't play Gutter anywhere near the way that I should have, but I think you probably, you know, like, you play Gutter a bit, so you know what she does. And
I tried to stay out of the range, and then also at one point, so when I went after Salvo was kind of running away to the right, my right side of the board, I then made sure I got Corsair over to Salvo to kill next turn, but then as part of that, did a couple of harpoons, you know, did a harpoon to drag in Gutter to pull Gutter away from all my other team members, because I know you can go in on Corsair, but you're still not going to kill him straight up. So
no, he's very hard to kill.
And so I was trying to use it, yeah, just to basically bog up two or three of your models and then free up that other side of the board.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Good games, though. Like, yeah. I enjoyed that first game because it was, I don't know, there was a point during the game where we're just wrestling over the ball and it's going back and forth, and, you know, Yeah, I guess sometimes you're playing a game and you're so deeply immersed in it, you don't really notice what's going on in the outside world.
Yeah.
And it was one of those games, like, I was just right in there and really, really hard fight.
It was a real thinking game. I'm surprised it ended so, like, in terms of the time limit, we smashed it out pretty quick, because there are a few moments where we both went deep into the tank just to, you know, go down those decision trees and try to work out, you know, what the other person was going to do or what's going to be most beneficial, so, yeah. Mm.
I did like as well that, like, at one point it became about me trying to, well, maybe not like, but it became about me trying to shut your scoring down.
Yes.
And I felt like once you're playing defensively like that, you know, you're really struggling to clear the ball from a team that, you know, specializes in actually getting it back.
Yeah, exactly. You know, attack was on the one. And, I mean, I think that's where, you know, Mainspring, that's who I'm trying to come up with. Mainspring grabbed the ball and tried to run away with it, and didn't have any influence. I couldn't, you know, get a kick off.
Do fucking
and
anything.
Then, yeah, and then basically next activation, or next turn, Grayscales comes in, steals the ball, does the goal. So,
yeah.
Grayscales is amazing, right? Like, where'd they go? Tackling, scoring goals. He's got the whole kit.
And he looks good too. Yeah. I like his model.
Shaolin got a monk.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it makes me want to get and play fish.
Oh, that's so good.
I wonder if anybody will buy my engineers or trade them. Actually, this is an open call.
This is it.
Anybody who wants my engineers, I'll trade you for fish.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliant. So just about home. Another fun night. Good games.
Yeah, no, it's been pretty good, and we'll smash it out. We've had a lot of fun doing the podcast, so we'll try to smash out another one pretty soon.
Yep.
Take it easy.
All right, bye. And we're back. Welcome back,
Cam. Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
It's almost like no time has passed at all.
It's amazing. The joys of technology and the interwebs. It's brilliant. I love
magic
it.
Magic of editing.
Yeah.
It's almost like you can record your intro and your outro in one single sitting.
Whoa. Just slow down, because then we might actually give away, like, the secret to all this this mess.
I'm blowing minds right now.
So, no, I thought there was some pretty good insights there. I did like the Carball, especially reinvigorating your hatred for Ballista on the whole, and reigniting my love for Corsair Fish, basically.
Yeah, don't enjoy Ballista. I really don't. But, you know, I respect that everybody comes to the game with a different perspective, and what is not good for me is perfectly serviceable for somebody else.
Yeah,
man. Fucking good luck to anybody who can make Ballista work for them.
Yeah. I think he's yet to win a big tournament. Didn't when the Engie's prize went off, it was Pinvice, wasn't it? It was Pinvice versus Ballista, but Pinvice won the day.
Right. Yeah. Man.
So sadness.
Look. I mean, he came close a number of times, from what I understand. So, like, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, everything's competitive. A good player will generally win, but still, Ballista, not my cup of tea.
I thought that was a pretty good episode, and we'll obviously be back with more. We make sure that we try to interview, you know, people who are not just winning, but, you know, who are in the know and have been around the game a little bit and, like, understand, you know, some of the finer points, because that's kind of what we, you know, want to bring to the audience, is, you know, teaching people a few things about the game.
Teaching ourselves a few things about the game.
Yeah, we're learning lots of how garbage, man. I am, and
I feel it's like a journey, and every step is a exercise in wonderment. Man, I'm just glad that, you know, we live in an age and a time where we can throw our thoughts out onto the internet and people actually listen to them.
I think we've got at least three hits on the last episode, so there's three people.
My mum.
I was going to say, I thought your mum had downloaded it. She always shouts out to us.
She seems to really like Salt, but, like, my mum's a fucking noob, so, you know, what would you know? So I want to throw a shout out to our good friends at the Kickoff Podcast. There's been a little back and forth on Twitter. You know, Hans Gruber memes and GIFs being thrown around. It's been good.
Yes. No, it has been good. So, you know, more than welcome for them to retort and fire some stuff back. We'll endeavour to get a few of them on the cast. I think Mary and Gabe would be great to get on independently, so we can get all kinds of stories going on, you know, especially with having Byron on. I think there's like three sides to all those stories. So.
And either way, like, we have to get Gabe on at some point, assuming that...
Yep.
You know, he's actually got the stones to come on here and have a talk to
us. Ooh, the gauntlet. It's been laid down.
I don't want to create a controversy. Or maybe I do.
No. Maybe you do. If you want to send us any messages, you can tweet us. I'm at Stubby Holders. And Dave, you are?
I am at @scrub_random.
Yep. So if you, if anyone wants to get in touch, be sure to send us a message. You can also jump on the forums, leave a message on our the link or the post we've created for Double Dodge. We've created one for each episode so far, just to kind of keep things going and people to give us feedback.
Yep, we love to hear from you. Abuse, accolades, whatever. We don't care. All attention is good. We're basically crazy high school girls.
Yeah. With deep voices.
With testicles that have descended. Yeah.
Indeed.
Mm. So, what do you reckon, Cam? Shall we wrap it up for another episode?
Yeah, on that note, we'd like to thank you all for listening to another episode of Double Dodge. We'd like to thank Big Daz from Nerdvana Games. And, yeah, I'd like to leave it there.
All right, episode 3, done and dusted.